Hello, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, February 3rd, 2014, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Do you realize that we haven't had an edition of the Erotic Mind series since last October? Well, it's true, and that ain't right. As you probably know, this is the show where I chat with noted erotic artists, both visual and literary, from all over the freaking world. Today we turn our attention to the literary end of the spectrum, and we travel to the wilds of Portland, Oregon, to visit with the delightful Stella Harris.
Hey, Stella!
She's going to be here in a minute. Stella is a renowned author. Her prolific output often features lots of edgy and kinky stuff. And I'm guessing, if we ask really nice, Stella will read from her work for us. It'll be perfectly steamy stuff, I can guarantee. And it'll also be the ideal antidote to this midwinter chill and gloom. Be sure to visit Stella on her beautiful site, StellaHarris.net. She's also on Facebook and Twitter, too. Look for all of these links in today's podcast posting.
Hey, Stella!
Listen, buddy, keep your shirt on. On second thought, take your shirt off. Just sit down and be quiet. Today's podcast is brought to you by Dr. Dick's Stockroom. You'll find this treasure trove of sexually stimulating toys, implements, and fetish gear right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the Dr. Dick's Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site. You'll surely enjoy shopping at Dr. Dick's Stockroom because it's just so damn fun, and, I might add, easy. Yes, sirree, sex fans, you can spare yourself the embarrassment of skulking down to your local sex emporium to pick out all those nasty toys you've been drooling over. You can forget about seedy storefronts in unsavory neighborhoods, and you don't have to worry about leering salesmen scrutinizing what you buy. Why? Because you shop from the privacy of your own computer, that's why. Thanks to Dr. Dick's Stockroom, it's never been easier or more discreet to be a big fat pervert. Be sure to take a moment out of your hectic schedule and visit my stockroom today. You will be so glad you did.
Hey, Stella!
Okay, then. On with the show. Welcome, Stella, and thank you for joining us. It's great to have you here for this Erotic Mind show. Would you like to say hello to all the nice people now that you're here?
Hello, nice people.
You know, there's a bunch of perverts in the audience, too, so you want to say hi to them?
Oh, hello, perverts. That's my favorite kind.
Oh, me too. And I happily count myself amongst those.
I do as well.
Yes, I know.
That's why I'm here, right?
Exactly that, because no pervert, no podcast. That's how we play it here. All right. So I've been spending lots of time on your website, StellaHarris.net. You are such an accomplished woman, and you are so adorable on top of it. How do you stand yourself?
You're such a flatterer.
I know, but you are.
Thank you.
And apparently you're not just a pretty face. On your Hire Me page, you list what you can do for us, your audience. You say, modeling. I have worked as both an amateur and professional model, and you can find out more on my Model Mayhem profile. Editing, fiction, nonfiction, business writing, fundraising appeals, even online dating profiles. If you need help with words, I'm your gal. Writing, erotica, how-to, journalism, fundraising, and many other topics. Consulting, web strategies, social media, book projects, fundraising, and more. Teaching, I teach on social media and fundraising, as well as sex education and kink. Recent classes include Intro to Submission and Intro to Dildo and Anal. And finally, kink coaching. Interested in kink, but not sure where to start? Have questions you don't know who to ask? I'm happy to help. In person, if you are in the Portland area, by phone, Skype, or email if you're not. Individuals and couples, welcome. bachelor and bachelorette parties too, I can show you how to safely introduce kink and BDSM into your life. If you're local, I can escort you to events, introduce you to people, and give hands-on instructions. Holy mackerel! When do you find your time to touch yourself impurely? You're so busy.
There's always time for that.
Isn't it the truth? Like, I'm doing it right now. That's just how it is. So
we make time for our priorities.
Okay, let's look at these in order. Modeling. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it sort of happened by accident in the kink world.
Uh-huh.
Way back in the day, all the way back to high school, I modeled for artist friends who were in the art program, and then again in college, both for people drawing or doing photography. I was in the arts college at my university, so everyone always had studio projects,
right,
and they needed someone to get naked, often last minute. So I would get knocks on my dorm room door, and it was not uncommon for me to actually study naked while someone drew me. And so that was my early forays, which I don't think I considered modeling necessarily, but it certainly led me to be comfortable being naked with an audience.
Right.
Santa Cruz was a very naked place.
Oh, there you go, Santa Cruz. Good for
this
you.
This was UC Santa Cruz, so there was lots of nudity.
Uh-huh.
So that was a great time to get comfortable being naked. And then more recently, in the last few years, when I entered the kink world, I was introduced to how closely related a lot of erotic artists and the sort of kinky population were with each other. And actually, at the first Munch I ever attended, somebody asked me if I would come and pose for them. And I figured, why the heck not? And I went and got naked for a stranger and, you know, sort of one of those...
Live to, like, tell about it. So
one of those what-could-possibly-go-wrong moments. And having survived that, I went back for more with other photographers, which has led to all sorts of interesting projects, even getting paid on occasion, which is brilliant. Most recently, I'm actually the cover model for a literary pinup calendar.
Wow.
So you can find that on my website as well. But that's maybe the coolest thing I've done so far, sort of rocking the naughty librarian look.
Oh, yeah, which you have in spades, darling.
I kind of can't help myself. So, you know, I just showed up in my own clothes that I have, looking how I always look, and it fit in. So that was a whole lot of fun. That's actually showing. There's an art exhibit for that in Portland now, so it's fun to be recognized for that.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about writing and editing. You do both. You write erotica, nonfiction, fiction, journalism, fundraising, appeals, blah, 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 blah. What's the difference in a nutshell? Is there much difference between writing and editing?
Yeah, I would say that they're different talents, and they don't necessarily go hand in hand.
I'll say. Because I suck at it. Oh my God.
I definitely think it's harder to edit your own work.
Well, that's
true. I certainly am never the final edit on any of my own pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I can come into someone else's pieces and see problems that they don't see.
Right.
And then in my own work, I need somebody to do that for me.
Right.
You get down to the nitty-gritty one word at a time, and you just aren't seeing the big picture anymore with your own writing.
Right.
So I always think someone else needs to edit your work, certainly.
Right. I'm dyslexic, and so I see what I think is there and not what is actually there. So
right.
When I was a kid in grade school, the nuns told me that I was retarded.
My goodness.
And that I wouldn't amount to anything because I had it really bad. Of course, they didn't know better than back then and stuff like that. So, you know,
right.
Where was that? But yeah, it's a difficult day. Do you have a preference? Do you like editing or writing better?
I think I like the writing better. I prefer creating.
Oh, I see.
It depends. I like to have several projects going at once. If I'm working just one thing, I'll get sick of it. So it's not uncommon to have a writing project open in one window and an editing project in another.
Oh, wow.
And I'll go back and forth between them to keep each one fresh so I don't get bored of something.
Right.
Sometimes it can be very nice to pop into someone else's document and solve their problems. I like the kinds of projects that feel like they have a solution. This happens sometimes when I'm doing website editing or doing some of my rope work. it can feel like problem solving. When you're writing a story, there's never that moment of this is perfect and it's done. It's just at some point you need to walk away from it.
Yeah, that's true. So I do sometimes
need to feel like I have that aha moment, which rarely comes with writing fiction.
Right. What's the difference between consulting and teaching? Are they much the same?
They are much the same. It's more a matter of scope.
Right. And situation, I would guess.
Yeah, I have been surprised the degree to which my nonprofit background has been relevant in the kink world. I was ignoring that for a while, thinking I'd left one and moved on to another.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw how relevant all of it was. Part of it started when a friend of mine who works as a pro-dom was asking for help with Twitter. And I realized that having been, you know, a professional in social media for nonprofits, I knew all of these things that were of value to her,
mm-hmm.
and ended up writing a whole piece about social media for freelancers and sex workers that got a lot of attention and that people really needed. And that was my first aha moment that all of this knowledge translates.
Right.
And
it does. It's a, you know, it's a it's a great fun thing. It seems to me like my most recent book is at least as Dr. Dick is The Gospel of Kink, and it's a primer of you know, communication skills and relationship building skills, and for the kinkster. And I admit right off in the bat in the preface that you know there isn't a separate set of communication skills and relationship building skills for one, the vanilla crowd and the kink crowd, but it's how one applies those in particular situations that make it applicable in somebody else's life as opposed to another.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. So kink coaching, that is, I've heard more and more people using that. Would you consider yourself a professional along those lines?
I'm working on making that a bigger slice
good.
Of the lamp pie
good, good,
right
good.
Now.
Good, good, good.
A good friend of mine and I have actually just decided to work on some of this together. We have taught together. On one occasion, we taught a rope class together, and so that's what we're starting with again. We're teaching a rope class coming up in Portland on February 16th. And then from there, we're going to expand to some other topics and probably teach some writing topics as well.
Oh, great.
And then we're considering being a coaching team. Some of the people I've had consultations with really like the idea of a pair of people teaching them and demo, especially if the people learning aren't quite ready to get hands-on yet. They just want to watch.
Right.
So it can be helpful to have two people there to demonstrate techniques.
What are you going to call yourself as a pro coach? A pro coach as a pro dom or pro sub or whatever.
Well,
I love it. There's
got
to be a new name. I mean, because this is up and coming. I'm seeing this more and more, and I think it's absolutely wonderful.
That's one of the things that's hung us up working on a website is we can't decide what we want the name to be.
Oh.
Don't want anything that will be too narrow. And
right, exactly.
Like we're only doing writing or we're only doing rope. Or so we might just stick with something that's a play on our names and go from there. But you can certainly find all the details on my website as soon as we sort it out.
Cool beans. So let's go back to erotica in particular. How many publications, hard copy and web-based, have you got out there?
Well, I had to do a little bit of a count for the panel that I was on last night. Right now, I have stories in 11 different books.
Wow.
And I have about 5 articles spread across a couple of different websites. And then there are several pieces forthcoming, both in print and online.
Hmm. You refer to yourself as a high-heeled purveyor of smut and as a sex and kink educator. Which came first?
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I think I've been a bit of a sex educator by default for much of my adult or slightly pre-adult life.
No kidding.
when I was first becoming sexually active, I didn't really have a family member I could talk to. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lot of research myself, because I've always been a bit of a nerd, and I approach everything, including sex, with research. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of reading and asking other people about contraception and safety. And after I'd been through that process, I was the best informed person among my friends, and I became the go-to in late high school and in college for friends who had sex questions. And I was always the person that would take my shy friends shopping for condoms or sex toys.
Oh, how cool.
So that became a default for me, and just a space I felt very comfortable in.
Huh. So apparently your ability to sling smut enables your educational outreach. And I would guess your kinky life infuses your smut production.
Well, as I referenced, I was on a panel last night, actually, uh-huh, about kinky writers, and this topic came up. And I think that everything that I do can't help but inform the other parts
right.
of my life.
Right.
The fact that I live kink makes it easier for me to write right. on kinky topics, and hopefully for it to come across as real for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that the other areas I'm pursuing right now help inform and, of course, also promote my other activities.
Right.
I'm trying to find, like I said, all the pieces of the freelance puzzle that are interrelated and work well together.
Right. You know, I really know what you mean by that. I have a lot of things, projects going on. The Dr. Dick thing, of course, you know, sex-related and is educational. But I do a lot of death and dying work, and I wrote a book called The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying way back in the mid-1990s, but I couldn't get it published until 2012. And it's curious to me that, you know, my approach to death and dying is infused by my sensitivity about, you know, sexuality and people on the sexual fringe and sexual minorities and all that kind of stuff. And in fact, I have a wonderful chapter in that book about sex and intimacy concerns at the end of life, blah, blah, blah. But I find that a lot of people, you know, particularly in the death and dying community, just when they find out about Dr. Dick, that's the end of that. It's like, how could you have anything to say, you know, about death and dying when you are a smut monger yourself?
It seems like those could really inform each other, though.
It does.
To do with such a familiarity and comfort with the body and
yes,
all the body goes through.
I think so, too. But there you have it. So I was fascinated by something else that you wrote. You said Stella's college studies had a special emphasis on gender and sexuality, and these remain issues close to her heart. Stella believes love comes in many forms and hopes to celebrate that with her writing. That's why you will find all genders, identities, sexualities, and relationship styles in her work. How cool is that? So do tell us more. Do you simply incorporate gender and sexual diversity in your erotica, or do you write from the perspective of different genders and sexual identities?
Both.
Oh, cool.
As much as I possibly can. I have published stories with the point of view of heterosexual characters, bisexual characters, lesbian characters, and even gay male characters.
Get out. See, now that's absolutely fascinating to me. You're not the first person on this show who has said this to me. In fact, when I first started this series, I was dumbstruck to find out that most gay erotica is actually written by women, which is
mm-hmm.
astonishing because, you know, I'm not good at writing erotica, gay or any other kind, but I can't even imagine, you know, like writing lesbian erotica. How do you get into character, so to speak?
It's interesting, and there's a lot of talk about this in the field and in workshops that I've taken. But if you think about it, if I'm writing a heterosexual couple, people aren't going to scoff at that, but there's still a man in the room.
It's true.
So I have to write a male character just as much in that instance than if there are two men. I think what you have to do, I mean, I'm the one creating the characters, and so I'm really getting into that one character's head and existence and
right.
truth. So I only need to write what is true for that character.
Yeah, right.
I'm not writing for all men or
yeah,
all gay
right.
men. Or when I write as a woman. I'm no more writing for all women. I'm writing what's true for this one character. Right. And if that comes through, then that will be true for some number of other people right. and not true for others.
Oh, that's interesting. So is it just me, or is the fetish and BDSM subgenre of erotica becoming increasingly more popular? What accounts for this, if you agree?
It's certainly having a moment right now. It seems to be that every 10, 15, or 20 years, some work of erotic fiction comes up that hits the mainstream, and suddenly mainstream media is reminded that kink is a thing, and they act like they discovered it for the first time.
I know.
And so we're having one of those moments right now where mainstream media has just discovered that kink is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's an upside and a downside to that. The
right.
upside, of course, is that because it has a track record of selling, more publishers are accepting kink writing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
it is a good time for people writing in that genre. And then, of course, the possible downside is that people seem to think that erotica is a how-to manual in a way that they don't seem
to. Oh, it's true.
Genres. No one's reading sci-fi and then, you know, thinking they're going to build a time machine. They do read erotica and then assume it was an instruction guide on impact
so
play
true.
Or anything else. And it's
so
just
true.
Not a safe way to get your information.
Good for you. I'm so glad you made that point because, you know, that's something I'm preaching all the time, don't you know?
I mean, that said, I think it makes me extra conscious of what I put out in
right.
the world. And
right.
while, you know, my fiction is not meant to be a how-to, but at the same time, I am very conscious that what I write is safe. And I do mention safe words and negotiation.
Right.
And if someone is getting tied up, they're being tied up in a manner that is safe. So I'm conscious of that and what I put out into the world as much as possible.
You know, that's a really curious kind of thing, because other people who have preceded you on this show have said, like, when they're writing about casual sex, either gay or heterosexual casual sex, they include condoms in their erotica. You don't have to, but they do, because you
mm-hmm.
know it's something like part of social consciousness. I think that's a wonderful thing. There you go.
Yeah, I've heard that asked about at readings that I've done actually as well.
Cool.
And that's definitely interesting, the divide of people who stick to firmly that they're putting fantasy out there
yeah.
and they're not worrying about that
right.
versus people who want it to be true to how they want people to behave.
Right. Interesting. So, listen, I want to make sure that you know that you are welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better. In fact, maybe this would be an ideal time. Would you care?
Sure.
Good.
Do you have requests, or...?
Anything that you've written is okie dokie with me.
All right. Well, I've got a few books here on my desk. I'll grab for you Strummed first.
Okay.
And I'm going to jump a little ways into the story, so I'll read the blurb from you from the back about what the story is about.
Okay.
My story is called Well Played, and the publisher's blurb is, "A young cellist has the chance of a lifetime at a very prestigious institution, but her position is soon compromised by her frustratingly gifted, handsome, and manipulative section leader."
Get out.
So, diving into the story. Isabel opened the door only far enough to slip inside and didn't bother to turn on the light. She settled down behind the couch, her back to the wall, and waited for Kurt to arrive. Dinner would be over soon, and she knew his patterns and habits as well as she knew her own. Isabel grew nervous as she waited in the dark. Maybe she should have just asked to sit in on his practice. But then she would have had to admit that her own playing was off, and after that day's rehearsal, she didn't need to give him any more evidence that she was off her game. Telling herself that she was making the right decision, Isabel settled in to wait. She didn't have to wait long. As soon as her heart rate had returned to normal, she heard the door open and the room flooded with light. Her pulse began to speed again. What if he caught her? What would he say? What would he think? Isabel held still as she could and tried to control her breathing. She hoped Kurt would start playing soon so that he'd be less likely to hear small noises in the room. Right now, he'd be able to hear a pin drop. Isabel heard the sound of the chair creaking, the cello case opening, and moments later the first beautiful notes filled the room. He was playing one of her favorite pieces, Bach's Cello Concerto No. 1 in G major. And Isabel was transported immediately. The magic was returning, and she felt it flowing into her body and spreading through her, as if she were being submerged in warm water. Isabel forgot everything but the music. Forgot that she was crouching in someone else's practice space where she shouldn't be. Forgot that day's bad rehearsal. Forgot everything that was at stake for her that month. Her whole world narrowed to the notes being played mere feet away from her, and the familiar tingle began to spread through her body. She recognized the feeling now, and she craved it. Already kneeling on the ground, she didn't have to worry about her knees going weak. A high note made the hair on the back of her neck stand on end, and she raised a hand to soothe the now oversensitive skin. She let her hand linger there for a moment, enjoying her body's heightened response to touch. She let her hand trail down her neck, her chest, across her breast. Her nipples hardened almost painfully, and Isabel had to suppress a gasp by biting her lower lip. Her hand kept moving, as if of its own volition, or perhaps guided by the music. Her fingers found the sensitive peaks of her breasts and brushed across them once, and then again. She fought to keep quiet, and her teeth bit down so hard on her lip she feared she'd draw blood. Isabel's breath was coming faster now, but this wasn't enough. She didn't just need to hear the music, she needed to see him play. Moving as slowly and quietly as she could, Isabel leaned forward until she could just see around the end of the couch. From here she had a perfect view of Kurt as he played. His unruly blonde hair fell into his face, and as his head turned from side to side, his hands moved with his instrument as Isabel's own explored her body. She felt as if he and she had both been taken over by the same invisible force. Right and wrong didn't exist anymore. All that mattered was the music, and she had no choice but to give in. She stopped fighting the impulse and let her hand slide beneath her skirt, beneath her panties, and into her wet cunt. It was too much. She released the moan that had been building her throat since Kurt had started playing. The music stopped almost immediately. Isabel froze and her eyes shot up, but that's all she had time to do before Kurt was standing over her, bow still in hand. The worst part was that he didn't look surprised or disappointed or angry. He looked like finding her here was inevitable. Like this had been bound to happen from the beginning, and she'd had no choice in the matter. She hadn't even moved her hand. As he looked down at her, she was kneeling at his feet with one hand still shoved into her panties. The realization caused heat to flood across her face and chest. Isabel was sure she was bright red. She'd never even allowed a lover to watch her touch herself, and the idea that someone she idolized was seeing her like this was the most mortifying thing she could imagine. "Come here," Kurt said. His voice wasn't raised, but the command was clear. Saying no was not an option. Isabel hurried to comply, but did so awkwardly. There was no graceful way to get out of her current position, and she knew if she withdrew her hand, it would be incriminatingly wet. She couldn't decide if that was worse than what he was seeing now. But most of all, she didn't want to be told again. So she stood quickly as she could, folded her hands behind her back, and closed the short distance between them. Isabel couldn't bear to meet Kurt's eyes, so she looked down and studied the distance between their feet. The silence was deafening, as if the room itself mourned the loss of the music and blamed her. Kurt didn't direct her any further, just grabbed her by the neck, by the back of the neck like a naughty puppy, and guided her around to the front of the couch. He positioned her so that she stood in front of the sofa, her calves pressing into the soft cushions. Kurt resumed his seat and took his cello in hand once more, but he didn't begin to play. Instead, he had another command for Isabel. Strip. Isabel thought she'd heard wrong, or that he was joking. But his expression was deadly serious. "Don't make me tell you again," he said. That spurned her into motion. Her hands shook as she reached for the buttons on her blouse. Isabel couldn't remember ever having been more nervous, not even during her audition. Kurt's cool blue gaze stayed on her all the while, assessing her the way he did when she played. Isabel blushed under the scrutiny. She gave up on elegance and settled for efficiency, removing the rest of her clothes as if she were alone at the end of the day and not being watched by the object of her fantasies. "Sit on the couch, lean back, and keep your knees at least 2 feet apart." Kurt's instructions were spoken in a clear and precise tone, the same way he led rehearsals. Isabel tried to find the headspace that would allow her to follow his commands, unquestioned, but her embarrassment kept getting in the way. She paused for too long, and Kurt tapped the end of his bow against the floor, just as he did when he was displeased in rehearsal. The familiar gesture was just what Isabel needed to make her body obey. She assumed the position Kurt requested, with a last internal struggle to force herself to spread her legs. "Good," Kurt said, and his praise was as intoxicating as ever. "Now finish what you started," he said, and resumed playing. And
I love it. You are a dirty little thing.
That is from an anthology of music-themed smut.
So, that was a good story. When was that published, do you recall?
That came out in the summer of this last year.
Ah, very cool.
It's available in print or in ebook form, and just my story as a standalone is
no
also
kidding.
Available.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
So, yeah.
So another page on your site lists some of the reviews your work has received. And here's one that really impressed me. This was a comment made by someone about The Big Book of Orgasms. This reviewer wrote, or commenter wrote, "A lover found this book on my bedside table last weekend, read to me while taking a breather. This has been repeated multiple times since, and I must say I'm thoroughly enjoying the addition to our time together. The stories are quick and hot and perfectly paced for brief interludes to spice up play. So far, our favorite has been The Jeffrey Factor by Stella Harris. My lover really enjoyed the story of toy play between two men. The reason that I like this so much is because I am forever trying to get couples that seek me out for counseling to read erotica aloud to one another. It is the answer to so many sexual problems that couples face. Do you see the value in that as well?"
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think erotica is a great way to introduce a new fantasy or to gauge your lover's interest in a kink you might want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of people, it's more accessible than watching porn. I think.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
Oh, it's true. Right, right, right. And you know, the thing is, I mean, it's curious to me because I've had clients come to me, particularly women who, you know, are just really buttoned down and closed down and stuff, and just uncomfortable with, I mean, they can't say the words. And one of my philosophies is that if you can't talk, you can't say it, you can't do it. And so, you know, trying to get them to say, you know, the naughty words that they have been suppressing all of their life is really, really difficult and nerve-wracking for them. And that's not fair, doesn't seem to me. But at the same time, if I give them a book of erotica and I ask them to read it aloud, they are actually reading the naughty words because they're not forming them themselves. They're reading something else that somebody else said. But if they can still hear themselves say fuck and cunt and, you know, whatever. And it seems to be a good thing.
It's easier when it's not you, when it's from a script.
Right.
I have some background in theater, and so I initially got comfortable being in front of people by playing characters.
Yes.
And that skill set has been very valuable to me
right.
now that I stand in front of people
right.
as myself.
Right. And isn't that a good part of, you know, what kink and BDSM is all about is, you know, assuming a role for, you know, a period of time, either, you know, for a scene or, you know, even if it's 24/7, but it's basically role-playing.
It can be, yeah. There can be a great deal of role-play and kink if that's your thing. I think for some people, they would argue that it's just who they are.
Right,
but
right.
For me, there's definitely an element of role-play. I mean, when I'm getting dressed to go out, depending what my plans are, putting on the makeup, doing my hair, putting on a corset, that's getting into a costume in a
right.
way.
Exactly. Exactly that. Do you find that that's liberating in some sort of way, that you don't have to be, you know, Stella Harris? You can be whoever else you want to be at any particular time because you are assuming this costume.
I don't think it ever stops being me, but I
interesting.
Think that some of that dress up can help get into the headspace I need to be in for that particular event or for that scene that I have planned.
Right. Right, right,
you know,
right.
if the scene I have planned is one where I'm topping, you know, the corneals can help get me in the mindset, even having the toy in my hand. Whereas if it's going to be a scene where I'm bottoming or being submissive, the act of being on my knees or having a collar put on,
right.
helps accentuate that mindset. But it never stops being me. It's just different facets of right. my personality.
Well, that's cool. So I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up for today. I'm just getting started with you, don't you know? any chance I could entice you to come back next week and chat with us more?
Oh, I'm sure you can be very enticing. Certainly, I'd be happy to do that.
Oh, yay! Not even had to beg. I like that. Thank you. I'll save my dignity. Not the little shred that I have left.
At least until next week.
Exactly. And you can assume a different role with me next week. How's that?
There you go.
Okay. So before we go, give us your website address, walk us around a bit, and be sure to tell us where we can buy your work.
Certainly. Well, you can find me online at www.stellaharris.net. It's spelled StellaHarris.net. And from there, you can find out all about me. There's a link to my published works with links to where you can buy.
Very cool.
Depending what city you're in, a lot of my works that are published by Cleus are available in most brick-and-mortar stores.
Yes.
As well as just about everything should be available from Amazon. Over to my website and you can find links to everything. If you're a Twitter person, you can find me on Twitter at Stella Erotica.
Great. And you're on Facebook too.
I am on Facebook. Yep. I am all over the internet, and my website does have links to my Facebook and my Twitter.
And today's podcast posting will also have these links, so for our audience's ease to find you. Okay, until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Have a good week, and talk to you soon. Hey, pretty wonderful show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my conversation with Stella Harris and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's Stockroom. Listen up, you guys, if your sex life needs a little sprucing up, and whose doesn't? I want you to mosey on over to my online sex emporium and pick out something really naughty for yourself or one of the other pervs in your life. I mean, if you can't find what you're looking for in my stockroom, you better just call off the search right now. Dr. Dick has put together a dazzling array of products that will liven up even the most ho-hum sex life. Not sure what to buy? Take a look at my sex toy reviews site, drdicksextoyreviews.com. It's chock full of swell gift-giving ideas. Look for the Dr. Dick Stockroom banner in the sidebar of my site, and remember, a portion of every sale comes back to us as support for these marvelous shows. How great is that? Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.